Barbara Rainey has discovered that holidays are perfect teaching opportunities for families.
I think our children intuitively know that there's something important. Otherwise, why are we celebrating? They sense that there's some meaning behind this thing called Thanksgiving. There's something important behind this holiday called Christmas.
This is the Revive Our Hearts podcast with Nancy DeMoss Wolgemuth, author of Choosing Gratitude. For November 17th, 2021, I'm Dana Gresh. Believe it or not, Thanksgiving is almost here, and Christmas is just over a month away. The time between now and then could either be a roller coaster of busyness or a meaningful time of focusing on Jesus. What will it look like for you? Nancy wants to help you make the Thanksgiving and Christmas seasons more meaningful. Here she is to introduce today's guest.
I was having dinner with some friends in their home the other night. They have four little children. And they said to me in the midst of the conversation, "So we are trying to figure out what in the world we can do to keep Christmas Christ-centered." And we started talking about the activities in the weeks ahead and with their little children, how to make it not all about getting gifts, but about giving and Christ. And I was so glad to have that conversation as a preparation for the conversation we're having today with my longtime friend, Barbara Rainey. Barbara, welcome to Revive Our Hearts.
Thank you, Nancy. It's great to be here.
And you are like the queen of making holidays special and meaningful, and I've followed you over the years as you've tried to invest in families and sounded a trumpet for not just letting holidays be meaningless or secular,
right. But
having them be really Christ-centered. So it's just so timely as we're heading into Thanksgiving now, and these next several weeks for so many families are going to be a lot of activity running around, and then you end up, January 1 saying, "What happened? What did we do?" And we're exhausted and broke and
exactly.
At each other's throats. And so I'm so thankful that you're going to be able to help us as we talk over the next few days. Think through what we can do as individuals,
right,
as families, to really have a meaningful holiday season. So, Barbara, you're a mother of six grown children, and now how many grandchildren is it?
It's a bunch of kids.
A bunch of kids. So you've had a lot of holiday celebrations, a lot of Thanksgivings and Christmases with your family. What first got you thinking about how to make those holidays really a significant time in your family's life?
Well, I first started thinking about this when I was a mom, and I had a house full of kids, and my kids were running around, and they were all excited about the holidays, and they would hear from their friends all about Santa Claus and all of these different things. And I remember thinking, no, wait, it's not all about Santa Claus. How can I teach my children that it's all about Jesus? And so we tried some different things through the years, but I never found personally as a mom the kinds of resources, the kinds of products, the things that would help me communicate the depth of truth that I wanted to communicate to my children. About the most we were able to do was make the manger scene the center point of Christmas. That was the focal point of the decorations that we put up. And we worked really hard, Dennis and I did, to help our children focus on giving and what they were giving to one another and to us and to whomever, rather than on what they were getting. But as far as having something that helped me teach my children who Jesus was and why he was born, why he came, the importance of that, I couldn't find anything that helped me communicate that in a way that my children could understand. And a lot of the reason that I didn't do anything then is because I was just so busy being a mom. I was so overwhelmed, like most moms are today. I was overwhelmed with Christmas and the parties at school and things that had to be done. And for me to take the time as a mom and create something that I could do with my kids just wasn't going to happen. And so now in my empty nest years, I'm really enjoying creating products and resources that moms and dads can use during the holidays to teach their children the truth about Christ, things that I wish I had had. And it's just really been a delight to be able to do this.
Well, and you have produced some beautiful resources. And what I love about them is not just that they're beautiful to look at, but they are accompanied by great teaching tools and getting families into the Word. But now we've got Thanksgiving right on us.
Right.
And that's become a pretty secularized holiday as well. Mm-hmm. And I know when your kids were growing up, you put a lot of focus on the attitude of gratitude and how to use Thanksgiving as a time to really express gratitude to the Lord and to each other. Take us back to those years when your children were little, and what did Thanksgiving look like in your home?
Well, I remember, again, this is another holiday when I wanted to communicate to my children the truth of what it was all about, which is being thankful and being grateful. And I've discovered through the years that holidays are really prime teaching times for families. I think our children intuitively know that there's something important. Otherwise, why are we celebrating? They sense that there's some meaning behind this thing called Thanksgiving. There's something important behind this holiday called Christmas.
And it's more than just a day off from school.
Exactly. And so I think their hearts are perhaps more open than at other times of the year in the ordinary dailiness of life. And I sensed that about my children. I sensed it was true about me. And so it's a teachable moment that I think parents all too often rush by because they don't know what to do. They don't know how to connect with their kids on a meaningful level. They want to. I think all parents want to, but they don't know how. So I began years ago. Our youngest was probably only two or three at the time, but I, because I'm a history major in college and I love history and I love our heritage of our country, I found some stories that I could read to my children that would teach them more about what the holiday meant and why we celebrate Thanksgiving in this country.
So let's talk about who the Pilgrims were, because we just assume people know this, but many don't. Where did they start, and how did they end up wanting to come to this country?
Well, the Pilgrims were a group of people who actually were Englishmen and women and children who came from England. They were being persecuted in the Church of England because they wanted to worship freely, and so they first fled to Holland. During that time, they began to see the influence of the secular society in Holland. Their children, they felt, were being corrupted by the loose standards in the Dutch society. And they thought, "This, we may be free to worship, but this environment's not healthy for our children. Mm-hmm. Maybe God would have another place for us to go." Mm-hmm. And so the process began of praying, "Where would you have us go, Lord?" And the answer was America.
And yet, in spite of the fact that their goals were so noble and faith-based, the trip they took over on the Mayflower was far from easy.
The conditions on the ship were very, very cramped. They didn't have individual cabins.
This was no cruise
liner. Or staterooms. Exactly. They encountered a very, very severe storm, which cracked the main beam on the ship that had to be repaired. All of those delays left them running out of food. People were getting sick from the voyage. It was really, I think, beyond our comprehension what kind of conditions they lived in.
So when they finally arrived in the New World, it was the second week of November.
That's
1620.
Right. In today's thinking, when you arrive somewhere, the trip is over.
And yeah.
you have a home or a hotel or something waiting for you. And if you can just stop for a second and picture these pilgrims arriving after 2 months at sea, they were exhausted. They were worn out. Many of them were sick. And they stepped on shore and there was nothing. No homes, nobody to greet them.
And so they began to construct homes, and those homes were not the kind of homes we enjoy today, by and large.
The first structure that they built was what they called a meeting house, and it was the public place where they gathered for meetings or for church and worship. That's what they built first. They had several setbacks. The roof caught on fire, and All of this was going on in the middle of the winter, in December and January. So it was quite an ordeal for them to endure.
And then they had a lot of sickness that first winter as
well. That's right. Starting in January, they began to get sick, and many of them began to die. And at one point, Governor Bradford wrote in his journal that they were dying 2 and 3 a day. To me, it's a wonder that any of them survived at all. So it was not only difficult, but it was must have been incredibly sad.
Well, let's fast forward a little bit. We come through that first horrible winter. God is gracious. There are those who die off, but there are those who are preserved. They develop peaceful relationships with many of the Indians. But then we come to the first harvest, October 1621, and William Bradford, who's the 30-year-old governor of the colony there, declares that Plymouth should now hold a Thanksgiving festival and invite their new Indian friends. Describe for us what that first festival was like.
Well, William Bradford was a very strong believer and had great faith in God, and he understood that their survival was only because of God. And so he suggested that they have a day of Thanksgiving. And at that day of Thanksgiving, they invited the Indians to come and join them because one of their goals was to be on very good terms with the Indians, to be friends, to reach out to them, and to share the love of Christ with them. And so the first Thanksgiving was a time for both people groups to come together and to celebrate. And of course, they celebrated in very different ways. But the pilgrims wanted to honor God and give him thanks.
And so they came together, and before eating, they did what they had made a habit of doing, not only in the good times, but also in the hard times, thanking God.
That's right. The pilgrims had a habit, which we would do well to adopt as well, of giving thanks always, in all circumstances, good and bad. And this was one of the good ones. And so that before they ate, they began by giving thanks to God for all that he had done and the ways he had provided. And it was a wonderful time of collectively giving thanks and praise to God for his abundant goodness to them.
Mm-hmm.
So I would just read those stories to my kids. Dennis and I would take turns, but we would read them around actually the breakfast table. We didn't do it around the turkey and the dressing and all of that because that was when we gathered with extended family. And it was just too many people, too much chaos. And so we did our little Thanksgiving morning service, so to speak, around breakfast just with our immediate family.
And that was a tradition in your home for years and years.
Well, it started and it became a tradition.
Yeah.
Because I felt like I was doing something to impart truth to my kids, and I felt like we were teaching them something about gratitude by doing that, by having that little family breakfast where we read the stories, and then we each person had a card or a sheet of 3-ring notebook paper. It didn't really matter what it was. And each of us would write down 5 things for which we were thankful.
And you did this before you ate or after? Or?
No, we did it before because I always made this big breakfast casserole.
Okay.
And while it was baking in the oven, we would sit at the table, read the stories, and fill out our cards. And then we would each go around the circle of the table, taking turns sharing what we were thankful for, what we had written down.
Was it something like from the past year or?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Name 5 things that you're thankful for from this past year.
And the little ones did this too?
Yeah. And what's really fun is I have the very first one that Laura, our youngest, did when she was about 3. And it was a piece of 3-ring notebook paper with lines all over it and just these crayon scribbles all over it. But I remember I must have said to her, "What are you thankful for, Laura?" Because I, in my handwriting, over the scribbles, she would point to this one scribble and she said, "My blankie." So I wrote my blankie. "What else are you thankful for?" "My family," you know.
Sweet.
And so I have that. It's one of my favorite things. So over the years, we've collected a whole scrapbook full of cards. And so for the past 20-some-odd years, I have cards from every Thanksgiving where we have recorded what we are thankful for over the past year. And of course, as our children grew older, their statements of gratitude became more meaningful, more profound, because they understood more what it was all about. And so those cards have become a real treasure.
Did you ever find that at certain ages that some of the children weren't so eager to participate in this?
Oh, of course. Yes. I mean, kids are always going to give you the eye roll. I mean, it's especially in the teenage years, or they may just be having a bad day and they go, do we have to do this again? But moms and dads have to persevere because moms and dads are in charge, not the kids. And if you let the kids dictate it, it'll never happen. And so it's a by faith exercise. So much of parenting is a by faith exercise. And trying to do something meaningful at Thanksgiving and Christmas and the other holidays is also a by faith exercise. And I'm saying to my kids, you need to learn about gratitude. I'm not literally saying those words, but in my heart, I know what's best for them. They, like I, need to learn about being grateful. And so we're going to do this whether you enjoy it or not. And so some of those years when they were not too eager to participate, they might write a one-word answer: God, family, friends. And so it's
not so profound.
Yeah, they didn't really want to think it through, but that's okay. I mean, it's who they are, it's where they are, and it's a process of growing together as a family and allowing them to be in a funk if they're in a funk. But you don't stop because your child's in a funk or because they're giving you the eye roll, because you as a parent know that this is important. And over time, what's really interesting, and I just realized this year, because we have done this every year for Thanksgiving, Thanksgiving has become the holiday that is most important to our family, much more so than Christmas, because Thanksgiving is the one where we all, our immediate family, gathered every year and where we had that meaningful exchange about what we were thankful for. And that experience has cemented us in a way that simply watching football and feasting on turkey would never have done.
So, and you do those things too?
Yeah, we do those things too. Oh, yeah, we do. Because when we get together with the extended family later in the day, that's when we have our big turkey dinner, and we all watch football in the evening and on into the next day, because all of our kids by then were in starting to go to college, and that was important to them, and we watched it with them.
By the way, back to breakfast. The breakfast casserole was called?
Well, actually, there are two. One is company French toast, and the other one is just an egg casserole.
Okay.
So we got some protein. We had to have some protein.
We're putting those recipes up on our website.
Sure.
Our listeners can go there. Go to reviveourhearts.com. And maybe even when you get to Thanksgiving, you may want to make one or both of those casseroles. And certainly you may want to take the idea about having each person go around the table and write down or express things that they're grateful for. I'm curious, now that your children are grown and most of them are married and have their own families, are any of them continuing that tradition?
I think they are. I don't know for sure because so often a lot of them come home. And so we're just continuing to do it at our house. Our kids come home for Thanksgiving more than they do for Christmas. So on the Thanksgiving holidays when they're not there, I'm not 100% sure
so
what
they're
doing.
So when they are with you, then you've got grandchildren doing it too.
Yes, we do. And so I've got a stack of cards now that we go through every Thanksgiving. But I think the tradition is cemented enough in their experience that when they stop coming home, I think they'll be doing it.
Yeah. Now, I seem to remember something about kernels of corn.
Well, one of the stories that I read to the kids is a story that can't be proven historically, but the tradition tells us that on that winter, the first winter that the pilgrims spent in the Massachusetts colony, what became the Massachusetts colony, that their food rations ran out. And so Governor Bradford and the other leaders decided that if they were going to survive the winter, when they obviously couldn't grow anything and there were no stores to be had, there was no place to go buy food, all that they had was what they could catch on the end of a fishing pole in the bay, that the food supplies that they did have would have to be rationed. And tradition says that each person was limited to 5 kernels of corn. And so we, on Thanksgiving morning, when we sit down while the casseroles are baking, everyone has 5 kernels of corn on their plate. So as we go around the circle sharing what we're thankful for, we each drop a kernel of corn in the little basket and then read number one off of our list, and then it goes around 2, 3, 4, and 5.
And I think those symbols can be so important.
I think they can too.
Nothing huge about a kernel of corn.
No.
But it's a word picture. It's a picture in a child's mind that is going to stay with them.
I agree. I think it's good for kids to look at that. And whether or not they literally had 5 kernels of corn or not, it's a good reminder for them to go, wow, they didn't have much, even if it was 10. And it's hard to sustain life on so little. And yet the stories that they wrote, Governor Bradford and others wrote about how they continued to praise God and thank Him even though they had almost nothing to eat. And even though many people were dying from disease, no one died of starvation. And it's so remarkable to me that in the midst of such harsh, difficult circumstances, these people every day were praising God. And so it's a wonderful, wonderful lesson to cement in the minds of kids. And so we have read those stories every Thanksgiving morning for over 20 years now. And my kids know them by heart. And now the grandkids are starting to know them. And so if you skip a line, the grandkids go, "You forgot about the whatever." And I love that they know those stories so well, because that can be a reminder to them that if they can be thankful in those harsh conditions, then maybe I should be thankful in my situation that's not nearly as difficult.
I hope that you will really seek the Lord about whatever your season of life is, how this Thanksgiving can be a particularly celebrative and thankful time for you. My mother years ago, many, many years ago, she had a beautiful singing voice, and she made a Thanksgiving CD singing songs of that season. And it was, you know, cassette tape. I've now, of course, got it on CD. And one of my Thanksgiving traditions is I play that CD, not every year, but often. And of course, the Psalms are so full of gratitude songs, mm-hmm. thankful songs. Mm-hmm. And what a time, whether you're by yourself or you and your mate or a roommate or a family, to read some of these scriptures. Psalm 103, "Bless the Lord, O my soul, mm-hmm. all that is within me. Bless His holy name. Bless the Lord, O my soul, and forget not all His benefits." So in the hurry and scurry of whatever's going on in your household this week, what a great time to recount the Lord's benefits. And it will surprise you what the Lord has done. And even as I say that, I realize that, Barbara, in your family and in mine and in any life, there are seasons when Thanksgiving falls at a hard time, mm-hmm. when maybe there's just been the loss of a loved one, or there's somebody not at the place at the table that they would have been, maybe a prodigal son or daughter, or maybe your eyes are more filled with tears than with joy this Thanksgiving. But then what a time in the midst of the tears and the loss to lift our eyes up and say, "Oh Lord, You are still faithful. Mm-hmm. You are still merciful. Your faithfulness towers over us, as the scripture says. Your loving kindness endures forever." And so in even those sad times, we offer up a sacrifice of thanksgiving. And I hope that whether it's a happy or sad time, that you will be counting your blessings mm-hmm. and giving thanks to the Lord. And what a great way to be training and discipling your children.
Nancy DeMoss-Wolgemuth has been talking with Barbara Rainey about how we can approach the holiday season. I hope this conversation is inspiring you to focus on what you're thankful for. I hope you're praising God no matter what situation you're in. We want to encourage you to keep cultivating a grateful heart with the new Revive Our Hearts wall calendar. Our team designed this beautiful calendar to help you stay grateful and grounded in God's truth through the holidays and all next year. For 13 months, you'll flip each month's page to reveal God's promises from Scripture, along with an inspiring quote from Nancy. It'll be a constant reminder to your heart to cling to God and His Word. When you make a donation of any amount to Revive Our Hearts, you'll receive this wall calendar. It's our way of thanking you for supporting the ministry. Your gift is making a difference in the lives of women. Women like Maria. She's a homeschooling mom of 8 and lives in New Mexico. She recently called and left this message.
"I just am so thankful for Revive Our Hearts. Some days I feel like I'm drowning in responsibilities, but you guys help point my eyes up that I can look at the Lord and see His goodness and His faithfulness to me and to my family, that I don't have to worry so much about my kids and the ways that I fail them every day. but I can trust in the Lord and know that He's going to get us to a good place and finish the work that He started in us. I've shared many Revive Our Hearts podcasts with my kids and my husband because it's been so impactful for me, and I just enjoy it so much and figure that they can get something out of it too. So thank you for what you do.
Thank you for sharing that, Maria. And when you give to Revive Our Hearts, you're partnering with us to point women like Maria to the truth and hope of the gospel. Visit reviveourhearts.com if you'd like to make a donation today, or call us at 1-800-569-5959. And please don't forget to ask for the Revive Our Hearts wall calendar. That's 1-800-569-5959. Join us again tomorrow as Nancy and Barbara continue this discussion on how to approach the holidays. We'll talk about what we can do over these next weeks to guard our own hearts and those of our family members, and to really celebrate in a meaningful way what Christmas, this holy day, this holiday, is all about. So join us again tomorrow on Revive Our Hearts. Revive Our Hearts with Nancy DeMoss-Wahlgemuth wants you to experience freedom, fullness, and fruitfulness in Christ.